The following sermon was delivered by Rabbi Joshua Davidson on Friday, August 1st, 2014.
Dear friends, this past Monday, I experienced three rather poignant moments. In the morning, with one of our congregants, I visited for the first time the National September 11th Memorial and Museum. Entering the space, I put on my kippah for much the same reason I did when I visited Auschwitz over a decade ago. That death factory and Ground Zero alike have become, in a terrible way, holy ground, sanctified by the lives lost and the command that overwhelms you upon visiting. Zachor, remember. I had been living in New York on September 11th, working at Central Synagogue, and so I do remember very vividly that tragic morning and the days, weeks, and months that followed. In certain, I have to believe, deliberate ways, the 9/11 memorial is much like Holocaust memorials in Israel, Washington, New York, and elsewhere. The intent of their design is that you feel as if you had somehow been present when the horror occurred. And experiencing it that way, you are personally bound to remember it and to make sure others do too. Epical traumas like the Holocaust and 9/11 are ground-altering. Life can never be the same afterward, nor should it be. The Shoah on the one hand, 9/11 on the other, reframed the way we as Jews, we as Americans, look at our lives and our world, much as the destruction of the temple did for the Israelites 2,600 years ago. Tuesday marks the 9th of Av, the anniversary of that destruction. Following my visit to Ground Zero, I made my way to Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza for the Israel Solidarity Rally, about which I spoke last Shabbat. Over 15,000 people attended, standing in the hot sun in support of our brothers and sisters and soldiers in Israel. "We stand with Israel, united for Israel," read the placards. The communal commitment that afternoon to the State of Israel and its people was palpable. But it's not something we should take for granted. Studies show that while Americans on the whole remain supportive of Israel, among American Jews, sadly, attachment to Israel has waned. Finally, that evening, Temple Emmanuel hosted a meeting of some of our Russian members. The Russian Jewish community constitutes a growing population on the Upper East Side. The purpose of the gathering was to learn whether we are serving this group as best we can, given its unique background, and whether we might do more to reach out to others our members know. Among those whose children are in our temple schools, I heard a profound commitment that their children carry on the traditions they themselves may never have experienced when they were young. And I witnessed an extraordinary love and concern for Israel. Though many did not grow up with any formal Jewish learning or practice, public Jewish involvement was often too dangerous for them, the sense of devotion to Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, the land and people of Israel, was ingrained in them. Perhaps when one is raised in a society where living a Jewish life comes at such risk, one better understands the importance of Israel, a Jewish homeland, to Jewish survival. Now we are witnessing anti-Semitism flowing through the streets of Europe, in London, in Belgium, in Germany, in France. Recently I received a letter from one of our members. "Dear Rabbi Davidson," it began, "not long ago, I met some Jewish people on a trip. They were from France. and they could only talk about moving to Israel because France is so anti-Semitic that it is hell for Jews to live there. The Jews everywhere need Israel, our homeland. And the letter concluded, "We will not exist without Israel, our lifeline." For European Jews, if the situation doesn't improve, it may indeed be. But even we, who are very much at home in America, need Israel. The largest Jewish community in the world lives there. Our sacred narrative grew in its soil. This week we begin Deuteronomy, the Torah's last book, which recounts the early tales of that narrative. Deuteronomy comes from the Greek, meaning second law, and largely consists of addresses by Moses to the Israelites on the eastern shore of the Jordan River. Much of the legal material from Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers is repeated, as are stories of Israel's wanderings in the wilderness, which figure prominently in this week's Parashah Devarim. As we pick up the narrative, Moses is standing before a new generation of Israelites who did not live the experience of their parents. None of them had been at Horeb, at Sinai. That entire generation, except for Moses, Joshua, and Caleb, had perished in the wilderness. And so Moses tells these children of Israel their story, where they came from, how they arrived at the threshold of the promised land, the adventures encountered along the way. It is the only way this generation will ever know. But when he relates it all, he does so not in the third person, they, but in the second. "You," he says, "you came to me and said, 'Let us send men ahead to scout the land.' You marched into the hills." Why does he include them in the narrative in this way? Because he needs to instill in them a memory of the past, and he wants it to be as a first-hand experience. Moses wants them to recall the journey as if it had been their own. All this is conveyed with the word "you." And more. For we, the readers, though thousands of years removed, also become part of Moses' congregation. We read "you" and understand "us." Rabbi Mordechai Kamenitsky tells the story of a Rosh Yeshiva, the head of a rabbinical seminary. His name was Rabbi Shlomo Hyman, the first dean of Yeshiva Torah Vada'at, who had a most amazing way of teaching his students. Unlike the dry lectures given by many brilliant scholars, he would shout with almost breathless rapture as he explained the Talmud and its commentaries. His eyes would sparkle, and his arms would wave as he expounded Talmudic theory. After the class, he would almost collapse from the exertion. One particular snowy day back in the early 1940s, only four boys came to class. Nevertheless, Rabbi Hyman delivered his lecture as if the room were packed with hundreds of students. Beads of sweat rolled down his face as he passionately argued points of law to the incredulous four boys. As he paused to catch his breath, one of the boys mustered his courage to speak and beseech the Torah giant, "Rebbe, please, there are only four of us." The rabbi's eyes widened. "You think I'm giving this class to four boys? I'm giving this class to hundreds of boys. I'm giving this class to you, your students, their students, and their students." And so Moses speaks to us. We too stand before him on the east bank of the Jordan. And he says to us, "These stories are not just about who your ancestors were. They are about who you are. Torah represents not just your parents' commitments, it represents your commitments. Monday's experiences certainly affirmed that for me. Ours is the task to ensure that the lessons of the past, be they of Auschwitz or Sinai, live in us and in the generations to come. And ours is the task to guard Israel as a refuge for Jews the world over and as the cradle of our faith, our spiritual home. May its people soon know security, and Israelis and Palestinians alike soon know peace. Amen.